So there have been people who said, generally people are more interested in a talk about the chakras or prana or, oh, I'm supposed to do that, okay. So Nick, you know.
Sashi. Then he says, you need your foundation.
You need the foundation. If you don't have the foundation, those things are not going to happen to you. So he's like, those things can happen to you, but please take the time to set them up a little bit. You know? Like, you can have a magical day, but you still have to find a car. Is that a good example? Okay, like, you got to get to her house, or his house, okay? There's certain things you need. You're going to need a little bit of money somewhere in there if you go out. You know? I mean, there's certain things you got to get rid of. So he says, get the groundwork ready first, and then the miracles will happen to you. Okay? Kobo Lama, Sairaki Sakekyan Lamrila Vagreshing. All the high experiences of Tantra depend on the steps to the path, Lamrim. They depend on Lamrim. Ching Lamto Su La Makepar Lam Lamgi Se Ching La Tsangya Minu. If you don't at minimum learn the three principal paths, okay, which is the guts of the Lamrim, okay, the core of the Lamrim, the core of the steps to enlightenment is three different attitudes. One, I've seen enough of life that I want to change. Yeah. And everybody gets there sooner or later, you might as well go now. Okay? Nick told me a story, do you mind?
No,
I don't know. He was like some happy New York cosmopolitan executive guy. Then somebody cracked a bottle over his head. And he was supposed to die. And luckily he didn't. Or we never would have met him. Right? But that woke him up. Maybe I should try that. But he was in intensive care for a long time, and they thought he would die, and then he came out. And then he was like, you know, life is dangerous, life is rough, life is deadly, right? And then I have to find out what's it all about, you know? What's going on here, you know? So that, there has to be, the first of the three principal paths is called, sort of like figuring out that life is, that this is suffering, that things are serious. And that leads to the second principal path, which is compassion, which is love. Okay? Everybody's having the same kind of life, you know? First you have a tragedy in your life, and then almost everybody can immediately think, oh, other people must be having the same thing, you know. Most of us, however wooden-headed we are, we can still think, oh, if my mother died and my brother died and my father died, well, gee, maybe other people, do you think anybody else has this problem? You know, they're like, duh, it's been going on around you your whole life. The second principal path is some kind of empathy for the world going through the same problems you're going through. Third principal path, you figure out reality. You figure out where these things are coming from, and you can adjust them. You can tweak them. Okay? The trouble in this world, the hunger, the poverty, the war, is coming about through certain causes which are internal. The state of the world is at any given moment is being spewed forth from a tiny spot in your heart chakra. So when you become aware of that, when you become knowledgeable about that, then you have a chance to save the world. Right? Then you can do something about the world. And those are the three principal paths. Have a tragedy and think, well, life is serious. So I have to work on this. Second, other people must be having the same problems. Three, is there any way to stop this suffering for everybody? Okay? And that's knowledge, okay, of where things are coming from. Not just you cannot have tantric experiences without those three. Not possible. That's what he says. Minu means sangya minu means not possible. You cannot have a tantric experience without a concern for other people and love for other people and empathy for other people's problems and some knowledge of where reality is coming from. Okay? You cannot have a tantric experience and you cannot get enlightened. Not possible. And that's the guts of the lumen. You need lumen. Nino, kowe nane, nane da nanda, del chiso, sasap mambo te me, lexo so, moza wa mante nam yam, lamizo wa mante man yoma dun luksam, lo la ke shubi dama tian minam. Chaji lamri nama shiva. Okay. Most of us are more attracted to the sexy teachings like chakras or meeting divine beings, having chance encounters with divine beings. Derecha means somebody goes to the Papago Mountains, right? I like them. I think they're all yogis. And did you see them? They're in the middle of Phoenix. There's two incredibly strange red mountains in the middle of Phoenix. And the Papago Indians lived in them. And their shamans lived there. It's weird. And they have hundreds of caves in the middle of Phoenix. It's at McDowell and 60th Street. And they're extraordinary. So, people go up there, somebody found some little cave painting, then everybody would rush to go see it, like, oh, this is something special, And then they would dump their lam rim, because everybody has lam rim, and they would all run to see the cave painting, And he's like, come on. That's called derecha. Derecha means you find a book under a rock in a cave or something. Then everyone's like rushes and says, this is it, 2012. People all over the world ask me about 2012, like, it's going to be the same as 2011 and 2015. Forget it, Then we were in the Bahamas and somebody got up and gave this long talk about 2012. I'm like, your problems were the same in 2010, and 11, and 9, and 8, and it's going to be the same in 13 and 14. It's not going to change, trust me. You're going to have the same problems before and after 2012. So go for the foundation, and then work gradually and modestly at it, and you will have miracles happen to you. It's predictable that you will have miracles happen. You probably started already. Okay? Amazing things, beautiful, amazing things will happen to you. Okay? Just, what do you call it? Charge your way at the lam rim. And that's the surest way to miracles. You don't have to run to Mount Papago and look through the caves for something else. Something more sexy. This is sexy. Okay. Here we go. Chapter 9, what's that? It's Solomon's Noam. Oh, la keshu pe tanga chia minam. What does that mean? Oh, don't look so low on the keshu pe tanga chia. He says, it doesn't seem to me that those little magical books that people find under rocks is gonna help you be a good person any better than something else. And keshu doesn't seem anything special to me. Okay? You have something special in your head. Now he's gonna start on explaining how the lam rim start. All right? And if someone's teaching you a system of meditation or a system of yoga or anything, you should ask, where is this coming from? Okay. Somebody says, okay, I'm going to teach you a special spiritual practice. Then you should be curious, I was taught, when I first went to India, I was taught this teaching. And then one of the big deals they made in the book was that you should check out your teachers. You should investigate a teacher before you go to their teaching. And you should check them out. Find out about any scandals, any problems. Find out what they teach. you should talk to a couple of their students, see if they are well-adjusted, healthy individuals who are kind and considerate and making spiritual progress. If you go to a yoga teacher, you should meet their students and see if they can do a handstand, whatever you want. You should check the person out before you go to their teaching, okay? So I still had a year to go in college, and I got back from India, and I had to finish my last year of college, and then His Holiness forced me to. And so I got back, and I went to the, what do you call it, the registrar, and I said, well, I have to sign up, I need 3 more credits or something. And they said, okay, here's all the courses being offered. And I looked at it and I said, well, okay, this professor, I need to know more about them. And they said, what? And I said, well, I just want to know what the qualifications are, you know? And they said, why? And then I said, well, like, where did they go to college and what have they learned? And, you know, are they a good person? And can you introduce me to some of their... I brought this page to the registrar. And they were like, why? You know? It was so foreign to them. It was really weird for me because I thought it was such a good idea to find out something about the professor before you took the course. And then maybe talk to some... It's like when you hire a carpenter or something. Talk to someone whose house was done by them before and find out, you know. So I said, can you tell me any students who have taken this course so I can talk to them? And they thought the whole thing was really weird. But in this system, you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to check out the teacher carefully before you waste your time. Because you don't have much time. Okay? Adult, conscious, what do you call that? Senile and not still puerile. That sounds great. That could be a song, maybe. Not senile, not puerile. Time that you have between the time that you get out of your crazy teens and the time you start your too serious 50s and late 40s, you only have a few years, you know? You don't have time to fiddle around with some practice and then dump it and try another one. Because adult, conscious, intelligent, clear-minded, healthy body, years are very limited in your life. You don't have many. By the time, I'll do it again, this is going to be great. The time between when the pimples stop and the liverworts start is very limited. Okay? Like, your clear years are very few. You don't have many. Okay? You don't have time to pick up some, like, weird practice thing and try it. Oh, nowadays, I was in Barnes & Noble in Flagstaff. This couple came in. They looked like they were going to die. And I watched them for, like, I don't know. We watched them for half an hour, right? And we were having a class with those two guys. I was giving them a class. And the couple looked so sad, and finally I said, are you guys all right? You know? And they said, well, there was a snowstorm. And I said, yeah, I know. And they were like, we can't get home. The highway's closed. The highway east-west across Northern Arizona is closed. We can't get home. And I said, okay. You know, and they said, we don't have a penny. And we have a carload of fresh vegetables, but we can't sell them because we can't get to the market. You know, so they weren't asking me for anything, but I don't know, we just got a check or something. Someone just gave us a donation. I handed them $100. I said, just keep it, you know, here's my address. If you ever get some money, send me. If you don't, it's okay. You know, and they were like really happy, you know. And then they said, would you like some of the vegetables in the car? You know, I'm like, hey. If it was chocolate chip cookies, I mean. And then they said, we have a huge case of a whisker. What's it called? Hiawiska? Whatever it's called. And I thought they were talking about those Spanish beets. What do you call them? I thought they were talking about jicama. And I said, I like it okay. I mean, I'm not crazy about it. You know? And then they said, no, you don't understand, you know. This is the new path to enlightenment, you know. I'm like, huh? And they... about their background. I'm like, no, I don't need that. It's okay. You know? I do it from the inside. So anyway, those things will come and go. Next year there'll be some other thing, you know. In my time it was Don Juan and Carlos Castaneda. It had to be Mezcal. Yeah. It had to be, what do you call it? Peyote and Mezcal. And we'd go to canyons and try and wander around, get sunburned, and fall off rocks. It changes every year, and it's not very useful. It's better to be able to do it from the inside. Okay. The first time I met His Holiness was when, I told you, my mother was dying. We went together. He agreed to see us together. He turns to me, the first thing he says is, have you ever taken drugs? Yeah, my mother's sitting there. And I'm like, you can't lie to the Dalai Lama, and your mom's not supposed to know your drug history. Yeah. So I said, yeah, I did, you know, and she's like, he said, what's it feel like? He was very curious. And then I described it to him at quite length. And then he said, you know, you can do that with meditation. And then he encouraged me to try. And it was good. And I did. Right? So then that was about, I didn't ever use it again. So anyway, what Habonka Rinpoche is saying is he just learned very time-proven inner methods. And you will have all that amazing experiences. You will have trips, and you will have visions, and they will come. You can have them. They will come. And it's more cool because you can control them. You know? It's not like you try some drug, and maybe it happens, and maybe it doesn't, and then if you want to go there again, you have to go find the same ayahuasca guy, or whatever it is. You see what I mean? It's, you can use it anytime you want from the inside, and you don't need to buy it. And it's more amazing. It's infinitely more amazing. It can be a never-ending trip. And I did. I know those things. I've done them. And now I do this one. And it doesn't end. It's just a solid trip. You know? No. It doesn't have, like, you don't say it started at 3 p.m. and it ended at, you know, 9 p.m. or something like that. It's just constant. It starts at a certain point in your life and then it doesn't stop. Okay, so it's cool. It's also cheaper. Okay. Chanchin Lampi Rinpoche Mati Aje Rinpoche Zepa Am Joje Zepa Sob Min. Okay, so we're about to start the idea of Lam Rim. Say Lam.
Lam
Rim.
Rim.
Lam means path, Rim means steps. Lam Rim means a kind of teaching where you go one by one through certain necessary spiritual experiences, and by the end you're a Buddha. That's all. And it's like a car engine. Every piece is important. Okay? Every rimba, every step is important. They didn't add any and they didn't take any out, and you need to do all of them. Okay? There's a certain order that you undertake certain spiritual practices. And by the end of doing all of them, you're an enlightened being. You're in the body of an angel, and you're living with angels. Okay? And that's really fun, okay? So, he says, so when people hear the word Lam Rim, which is a Tibetan word, right? They think, oh, that's the book that Tsongkhapa made. Okay? Because the most famous book in Tibet is Lam Rim Chenmo. Say Lam Rim.
Lam Rim.
Chenmo.
Chenmo.
The great book on the steps of the path to enlightenment. It's the greatest book ever written in the Tibetan language. It was written by Jetsun Kapa. It's 1,000 pages long. And that's the prototype for this book, okay? And this teaching. So it was Tsongkhapa who wrote the classic, and we'll talk about it more. And that was based on an earlier teaching by Lord Atisha, okay? Who came from India and helped the Tibetans get started. And we're gonna study his whole story. He's on the cover of your notebook. Okay? That's him. So Bhakti Rinpoche is complaining. He says, people hear Lam Rima, they think, oh, it's that book that Jetsu Kapo wrote. Or it's the book that he based his book on, by Atisha. Okay? And then he says, Min. What's that? It's not. Okay? The Lam Rima didn't start with Tsongkhapa, and the Lam Rima didn't start with Atisha before him. Don't think that. It's not some Tibetan thing. Lam Rima, Min. Yantakwa Dzogbe Sange Komale Gyu Ombate. Rather, it is a system of teaching and a tradition of teaching which has flowed down through the centuries from Lord Buddha directly. Okay? Lam Rim is not a Tibetan genre of literature or something like that. Lam Rim is a system of spiritual development which traces Kona to Lord Buddha. What's Kona? The Kona, what's Kona by itself mean? Only. It just means only. Suchness is Kona ni. Kona by itself means nothing other. It is only a spiritual, it's a method of spiritual development which was designed by Lord Buddha. And it has come down since those times. And don't think Lam Rim was invented by some Tibetan in 1409 or something like that. Not true. Sorry, Kona, but he uses the word Kona, which is very strong. Only and nothing else. Kona. Kona de Giva Ombate. Deyang Kajangla Lamim Shepe Ningyang Yud Me Samle Koa Changla Sunga Kun Lamim Yinpe. Don't think what makes a thing a Lam Rim is if in the title there's the word Lam Rim. Okay? Like Lam Rim Chembo. Okay? Don't think a book is a Lam Rim only if it's called a Lam Rim. Why? Koa Chagna, Suna Kun Lam Rim Yinte. Once you understand what a Lam Rim is, you will come to see that everything Lord Buddha ever spoke was a Lam Rim. Okay? So Rab Kun Gin Nang Ne, Rab Dan Chok Dan Phutur Jirpan Ni, Shia Ching Gi Do De Rinpoche Yin. If you wanted to ask what was the highest and most precious teaching that Lord Buddha ever gave in the 51 years that he taught, it was the perfection of wisdom. Okay? It was the sutras on the perfection of wisdom. Prajnaparamita. Okay? Der Chirpung Yeti Shintogin Nengak Samul Langirimamudendan. Lord Buddha gave 84,000 different teachings. Okay? And all of their meaning is found in the single book on the perfection of wisdom. Okay? The Prajnaparamita. And you can divide everything that the Buddha taught. We don't teach much what the Buddha taught, you see? I've been teaching Diamond Cutter Sutra. We've taught Heart Sutra a little bit. That's about it. Those are two works out of 1,500 by Lord Buddha. Nobody teaches them. They're too difficult. But you could take all the teachings that Lord Buddha gave when he was alive on this planet, and they divide into two streams. They divide down through history through two streams of teaching. Okay? Say Sammo Langrimba.
Sammo
Langrimba.
Sammo
Langrimba.
Langrimba.
Those steps to spiritual evolution which relate to emptiness is one of the streams. One of the great streams of teaching. All the teachings are emptiness. Okay? The pen. Right? The pen. And it's not more complicated than the pen, it's just the pen. Meaning that when I hold up a pen and I ask you what it is, you got one, Ravi? Yeah, I ask you what this is. You see a pen. I say, if we opened up the door and a dog came in here and I waved it at them, what would they do? A And you say, if they were young enough, they would chew it, you know? And then you say, well, who's right, the dog or the human? What do you say? Okay, both are right, right? Then when we kick the dog out of the room, and when we kick the human out of the room, and we set this object down here, then what is it? Is it a pen or is it a dog's chew toy?
Neither.
You can say neither. At that time, it's neither, okay? There's no human in the room to see it as a pen. There's no dog in the room to see it as a chew toy. Okay? It becomes like a blank movie screen or something. It just becomes available to the first creature who walks in. If a human walks in, it will be a pen. If a dog walks in, it will be a chew toy. Before either walks in, it's just a thing. It's not either one yet. Okay, got it? That's emptiness. And there's nothing more up to it than that, okay? So I just saved you about 20 years. So that whole school of thought is half of the Lamrim. The whole teachings on emptiness that flowed down through 25 centuries is the pen thing. That's half of all the Lamrim. Okay? That's half of the perfection of wisdom. And in the perfection of wisdom, what we call the profound steps are taught Mutten. What's Mutten? Directly taught. They are explicitly taught. Okay? They talk the sutras on the perfection of wisdom. They talk directly about emptiness. Okay? Gyachewe Lamgirumba. Say Gyachewe. Lamgirumba. We call the far-reaching steps. Okay? So if someone asked you on a homework, which you're about to get, you should have got already this morning, maybe, right? I worked hard on that. I didn't hear much speak. If they asked you what are the two great currents of the Lamrim that have flowed down through history, what are they? And you're going to say the profound steps of the Lamrim. The profound steps. And that's a code word for the teachings on emptiness. The pen thing. If you put the pen thing, you get extra points on your homework. Then the whole other great current of teaching for 25 centuries was the teaching on love, okay? The teaching on compassion. And the code word for that is far-reaching. It reaches far. Through space, it reaches past countless planets and countless universes. Okay? And those teachings are a feeling which extends to all living creatures in all worlds. So it is wide, like an ocean, you see? And I keep telling you, you should see the Hubble thing. You can go on, what do you call it, Amazon? You can download it for $3. It's 45 minutes. The first half is dumb. You just see astronauts getting suited up and talking about how hard it is to eat an enchilada in space. And then, really, and he makes an enchilada in space. It's kind of cute. It's like beans. Tortilla. Hot sauce. And then it goes. You know, then he eats it really hard. That's the dumb part. And then the second part is unbelievable. It's so, so beautiful. And you follow the telescope out thousands and thousands of light years, billions and billions of miles. And you see, I don't know, I just love it. You see the coolest thing is a little egg factory where planets are being made. And it looks like a womb. It looks just like a womb. It's a whole vortex of energy. And it's real. And it has these psychedelic colors, like unbelievable colors. Unimaginable color. Like thousands of flowers. And then deep down inside this whirlpool are these little baby planets wrapped up in their cocoons, you know. And it's so cute. Just planets being made. And when you think about the two streams of the Lamrim, the one about love, you have to imagine love going out like those billions of light years, you know, like your love will, on the day that you have your first direct experience of that kind of love, your mind will go past those planets. And your love will cover all the beings between here and there and beyond, forever. Within a few minutes, you will make that trip. Literally. And visually, you will see those things. And it's so cool. You know? So, it's called wide-reaching. It's called far-reaching. The whole side of the Lama that teaches love is called, look, reaches everywhere. Goes forever. Okay? Very beautiful. Really beautiful. Okay? Gyachari Lama Rinpoche Drujin Kyan Kaba Kyan Gyachari Lama Rinpoche Tenbe Seki Tu Jambane Tome Gan. How did those two great streams come down to us? Okay, by the way, we're about to start a long section which will take us the rest of today and tomorrow, and it will take us the whole retreat. During the time that we're not meditating, we will be exploring how did these teachings come down to us. Okay? And that's checking on the professor at the registrar's office. Okay? And we think it's worth a few weeks to examine, is this a true path? Is this the real stuff? Tell me who taught it. Tell me how it came to us. Tell me who's been teaching it. Tell me who reached goals using this thing. Okay? And you should be demanding. You should demand to meet the professor. You should demand to hear their qualifications. And you should check them out and see if there's any dark, what do you call it? Things in the closet. You know? And so we're starting that process. Okay? So Seki Tuo means the crowning, the prince. What do you call it? What do you call the number one prince?
Crown prince.
The crown prince? Yeah. Seki Tuo means like the crown prince, which is Champa. Who's Champa?
Maitreya.
Okay. The coming Buddha, the next Buddha, who during this Buddha's time was a bodhisattva, just a bodhisattva, not a Buddha. So the teachings on love came down from Maitreya, who's the next Buddha to step onto this planet. He granted them to Tobe. Tobe means a Sangha, Master Sangha. That was 16 centuries ago. 16 and a half centuries ago. And a Sangha wrote them down. The emptiness teachings came down from Jamyang, which is in Sanskrit, Manjushri. They came down from Manjushri, who we consider an enlightened angel of wisdom. Okay? In the Buddhist time, it referred to a high bodhisattva. Okay? Jamyang Ne Ludu, he came to us through Ludu. Who's Ludu? Nagarjuna. Okay? Nagarjuna. He lived 18 centuries ago. The emptiness, the pen thing I just taught you, ultimately flows back to Nagarjuna 18 centuries ago. And then before him to an enlightened being named Manjushri. Okay. You want to know who's the professor? You know, and where did they learn their stuff? Okay, that's for the emptiness. For the pen thing I just described, that's the precise lineage. Okay, and for the Hubble telescope thing I just described, that lineage comes down through Maitreya. No less than the next Buddha in this world. And then the first human recipient was Master Sangha. Okay. And then came down to us. Jagyame Nudupti Jipe Sambo Nam Gyachame Namgye Rinpe Gyutsu Mindawa Nyisu Chun. By the way, I'm going to take a break at 5. We're 12 minutes away from 5. I'll take a break at 5. This class will go 2 hours, so we'll stop at 6. We've got to give you time for a good dinner, mainly me a time for a good dinner. And I suggest we break for an hour and a half after 6, so then we come back at 7:30 and go till midnight or so. We'll go for a while. So I will give you an hour and a half for dinner, so don't worry about that. And we'll stop this class at 6. Okay. Deyam janchi dinadam tome ki sadena so dan rujuki riksop duksop zene nagrihim sawat zechi. The early the early manifestations of the Lamrim, which were not called Lamrim, are certain collections of enlightened teachings. And I'm going to name some of them. Okay, you ready? Say Jamche.
Jamche.
Denga.
Denga.
Jamche.
Jamche.
Denga.
Denga.
Jam means Japa means Maitreya, the next Buddha. By the way, there are supposed to be 1,000 Buddhas arrive in this particular sector of space for the foreseeable future. And Maitreya's number?
Six.
4, 5, or 6? I think he's 4. He's 4. Yeah. Anyway, Chö means the teachings of Maitreya. Denga means 5 books of Maitreya. The 5 books of Maitreya. 5 books have already come to our planet by this next Buddha. Okay. In the monastery, we spend the first 12 years on one of them. And it's 75 pages. I said it's 75 pages. We do 6 pages a year. We debate 4 to 5 hours a day. We go to class for maybe 6 or 7 hours a day. So call it 11 or 12 hours a day. Plus memorizing times, call it 13 or 14 hours a day. On 6 pages a year. Okay? For the first 12 years. That's only one of the 5 books. Okay? You ready? Here's the 5. Say, Muntokyen. Muntokyen is the book we spend the first 12 years on. It's the ornament of realizations. It's an extraordinary presentation of emptiness. It's a reflection of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. By the way, so love is treated in the Perfection of Wisdom. The whole huge stream of knowledge called love stream, right? As opposed to the knowledge stream. The love stream isn't treated in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. They say shukten. Say shukten. Shukten means not directly. Not explicitly. It's treated implicitly. Okay. And then emptiness is treated explicitly. All right. So Muntokyen, which is a treatment on emptiness. Tekpa Chenpa Dilama, Uttara Tantra, or the Higher Way, Higher Mind, which you guys study. It sets forth the ideas of
Buddha nature.
Yeah, Buddha nature, most importantly Buddha nature, but what's cool? Mind only, okay? Which is one of the great four schools of yoga. Dodegen, Sutra Alankara, which gives the essence of certain sutra teachings. Uta Namje, say Uta.
Uta.
Namje.
Namje.
Madhyanta Vibhanga, okay? Dividing the middles from the extremes. Examining, for example, extreme views about emptiness. What are two extreme views about emptiness? One is that there's no pen at all. That's one extreme. Okay? If that's not a pen while we're not in the room, it's not a pen. It's never a pen. If it's not a pen while we're not in the room, it's never a pen. That's a wrong idea. Okay? If it's not a pen from its own side, you can't call it a pen. That's wrong. It's a pen because you walk in the room and your seat's open and you see it as a pen. And that's the only reason it ever was a pen, and it never was a pen from its own side. Okay, got it? To think it was a pen from its own side would be to say that when everybody left the room it was still a pen, which it's not. Okay? What's the other extreme? There's no pen. There's nothing there. Okay? Nothing exists. Those are two extremes. How do you know when something is an extreme? Oh, so let me restate the two extremes. One says, it's a pen from its own side whether there's a person there or not. The other extreme says, If it can't be a pen from its own side, it's not a pen. It's nothing. Okay? These aren't two extremes. Experientially, in your own real life, what's the test that your view of reality has fallen into an extreme? What's the barometer that you can use? I'm unhappy. Okay? If you're ever unhappy about anything, if you have any bad, what do you call it, stretch of a week or a couple of weeks in your life where you're definitely not happy, then you have definitely fallen into one of those extremes, no question. Either you're believing your boyfriend comes from his own side, or you're believing he doesn't exist. You know, you have some wrong idea about your boyfriend, and that's why it's making you unhappy. You cannot be happy unless you have a wrong idea about the man. If you understood where they were coming from, you could not be unhappy. Got it? So therefore, if you are unhappy, your view is messed up. You're doing something wrong as far as how you see the situation. Okay. If you can be unhappy, that's the barometer that your thinking is wrong. Okay? So Uttanamde was a book that distinguished between those extremes. Chena Cheni Namaje Vedenja, dividing things from their thingness. Chena Cheni Namaje, okay? Those are the five great books of Maitreya. They are, in essence, a lamrim. Okay, don't think Tsongkhapa started the lamrim. Okay? The five books of Maitreya are lamrim. They don't have lamrim in the name, they are still lamrim. Okay? Then he mentions Togmege Sadenga. This is called the five bhumis of Master Asanga himself. He wrote a collection of literature called the Five Levels. Okay. It's huge. It's thousands of pages. I was going to give you a whole explanation of those five, and you would fall asleep. Yeah. Okay. There it is. I wrote it out. Oh, you don't see it. I wrote the whole thing out. It took me so long. I'll have to do it some other time. It's not that interesting. I'll do it fast. I'll do it super fast, okay? It's difficult for anyone to tell you what the five books are. It takes a lot of research to just find the names of the five books. And they are probably some of the most famous Buddhist literature ever written, okay? By Asanga himself, by Master Asanga himself. So here you go. The first of the five has three sections. The first one is called the foundation book on yogic activity. The foundation book on how to act as a yogi. Those of you who care, it's Nyanjar Chöpi Sayamushi Samoboa. Okay? The second part, by the way, in the tenure, that's 1,000 pages. The first third of the first of the five books is 1,000 pages. The next part of the first book, right? It's still the first book, right? Neljo Chupe Sa Lai Nyetuki Sa. It's called The Levels of Listeners, and it's the second great section of the first book. Now, we use it a lot. Like your Bodhisattva vows, all that whole teaching the other day, about that comes from these books. Okay? Everything. And all the meditation poster came from these books. Right. People don't even know the names of them. Anyway, much less read them. Okay, Sanyin Nintukisa. The third, that's 1,000 pages. The third part of the first book of Maitreya is called Neljo Chupe Sade Chadusen Besad Dambu Korim. The levels of the Bodhisattva. The beginning levels of the Bodhisattva. Okay? All those three together, which are 3,000 pages, are the first of the five books of Asanga. Got it? Okay, now we're ready for the second of the five books of Asanga. Got it? Okay, here they go. Which is Neljo Chöpi Sa Namaje Apadua. It's called an abbreviation of the levels of a yogi. It's a little shorter. Probably it's for people who couldn't get through the 3,000 pages. The third book has two parts. Okay, so I'm reading you 3A and 3B. You ready? First one is called Nyanjo Chepi Sare Shidui Nangi Dode Dua. Nangi Dode Dua. A brief presentation of the beliefs of the Sutra school. This is the second great school of India, right? Sautrantika. Okay. By the way, they are the great what? What's their main subject to study, Venerable Nimbo?
Logic.
Okay. But by the way, when you say logic in Buddhism, it doesn't mean just formal logic, but we are the best in the world at formal logic also. You can out-Aristotle him any time. And we study it a lot. Because we learn how to think that way. But those, more importantly, that school teaches you why you see what you see. Which becomes very interesting when you're talking about tantric experiences. You see? If you understand the process of perception, if you want to have a tantric experience, if you want to walk into a restaurant and meet Vajrayogini, which for me is like, cool, you have to understand why you see a book, or why you see a wall, or why you see a car. Okay? Then you can understand how to meet Vajrayogini and rest of it. Okay? So that's the subject of the first half of the third book of Asanga. Okay? Second half of the third book of Asanga is called Dulwa Dua. What's that? It's a summary of the Vinaya teachings. It's a summary of the teachings on vowed morality, which is somehow hooked in with how you perceive things, which is somehow at the basis of meeting Vajrayogini and the rest of it. Okay? You have to know logic, perceptual theory, ethical theory, and you can meet Vajrayogini and the rest of it. Okay? It all has a place. Book number
four.
It's called, let me see. You could say a summary of topics. How's that? It's like a general summary of topics. Of these topics. And then number five is a brief summary of the whole thing. Those are the five books of the summary. Why did he mention them here? They're all Lanmen. You think Lanmen started with Jetsu Kappa? You are 21 centuries old. Something like that, okay? Alright, okay. Then he mentions Ludoki Rikzokju, the six books of Nagarjuna. Then we're gonna end the books thing, okay? So just hang in there. Six books of Nagarjuna. I thought you would like an explanation of why he wrote six books. And we have little time. What the heck? I've never seen this explanation, and I like it. So, you should know the names of Nagarjuna's, the six books of Nagarjuna. You should know the names. But I found a sexy little thing by Godin Rinpoche, who lived just before Tsongkhapa. He passed just before Tsongkhapa. Tsongkhapa was really irritated that he didn't get the name. He describes why Nagarjuna wrote six books. Okay? Which is cool. Here we go. Chetamje Ramshin Tomba Tendel Chupe Tadam Chavar Tumba Tony Dinchapa. The Gardener wrote a book called The 70 Verses on Emptiness. Okay, that's the first of the six. The 70 Verses on Emptiness. Why? According to Buddha Rinpoche, he wanted to show how nothing in the world was a pen from its own side. Okay? He wanted to show how nothing was what it was from its own side. Got it? Okay, that's the subject of the 70 verses on Angelus. Dele shen geola sota demargo tsawashem. Then he wrote Mula Pragna. Right? Then he wrote the most famous of his six books, which is the Root Text on Wisdom. The 27 chapters, which are the basis of every teaching on emptiness that ever happened after that, for 18 centuries, in China, Japan, Korea, Vietnam, Tibet, Mongolia, the civilized world. That book was the basis of all thinking on emptiness for millions upon millions of people for 60 generations after that. Okay, here we go. And what that book did was to deny that anything in the world could start or stop. That book denied that anything in the world could start or stop. So it's not quite the pen thing, right? The pen thing is static. Isn't a pen at the current instant, right? Tsawashera, the book, the Root Text on Wisdom, it tackled emptiness from a different point of view, okay? What point of view? It said, look, how could anything ever start? Come on. How is it possible that you could see something start? Let's say you want a boyfriend, okay? I would like to see a relationship start with so-and-so, okay? But let's make a practical application, okay? Why not? You know? Or I would like to see profits start coming in my company. You know, let's take boyfriend, okay? I would like to see a relationship start with a boy, okay? What do you mean by start? He will walk into Starbucks. Do you mean when he puts his hand on the door? What part is the start? What's the start of the start? Okay, it's not when he puts his hand on the door. It's when the door opens wide enough for me to see his face for the first time and he catches my eye. That's the moment of the starting of our relationship. That's what I want. Tell me how to make it start. What's your definition of start? He opens the door wide enough that our eyes, we make eye contact and we both know that's it. Alright? Got it? How wide does the door have to be for him to make eye contact? I don't care. It's an inch and a half. Call it an inch. Okay? To get an inch wide open, does it have to be a half inch wide open first? Yeah. To crack the door open an inch, you got to crack the door open a half inch first. That's obvious. To get it to crack open a half inch, do you have to crack it open a quarter inch? Shouldn't we really say that the moment of the start of your relationship is not when he catches your eye when the door is an inch open, but when the door is a quarter inch open? Can we say that? Because that's the start of the door being open an inch, isn't it? When it's open a quarter of an inch, right? Am I right? But to be open a quarter inch, does it have to be open an eighth of an inch? Okay, then it gets silly, you know. You keep going down, 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 down. What happens is you reach a distance that the door has to open for the relationship to start, which is not possible. It's not perceptible. It's too small for the human eye to perceive. Is there such a distance? Is there a distance that is imperceptible by a human eye?
Yes.
But that would be perceptible to a good microscope. No, there is. Come on. I mean, you get down to, let's say, half a millimeter. Half a millimeter. You can't see the door open a quarter of a millimeter. A human eye cannot detect it. Okay? But did it open a quarter of a millimeter before it opened half a millimeter?
Yes.
It must have. Even though we cannot perceive it, it must have. Okay? It has to have. Okay? And you can keep going down, but you can't perceive those things. They're not perceptible by the human eye. And you can reach a width of the opening of the door which is not conceivable by the human mind. But must it have opened that much first? Yeah, it must have, right? In the end, you must be able to get down to a distance which the door opened to begin your relationship. Don't forget, this is important. I'm not talking philosophy. It must have opened an infinitesimally small distance, shorter than which cannot exist. Am I right? You must be able to get down to a distance which is cannot be halved.
No, that's
no. You
can't halve it.
Must be. No. Must be.
You always have to get this time.
Can't you?
Divide by
can't
two.
You
is that another point zero?
Divide by two.
Yeah.
Divide by two. But don't you get down to the point where one instant touches the next instant? Don't you have to get down to a point where time moves? Doesn't one instant of the door opening have to touch the next? Doesn't the back end of the first instant of the opening of the door have to touch the front end of the second instant of the opening of the door for the door to be open? It has to, or else the first second is not related to the second second. So that the second second could take place 6 months later, and you're waiting to see his eyes. There has to be contact between the first second and... There must be contact between the first second and the second second. And that contact cannot have width, or there would be a second between. And that would be 10 years long. Okay? There must be contact on an infinitesimally small level, of which has no width. Because if there were, then there'd be more seconds. There must be. There has to be. Okay? There has to be. Which means there can be an atom whose left side is its right side.
This is not possible. No.
No. Cannot be within that contact. In the contact between the last piece of the first second and the first piece of the second second, there cannot be a period of time. It cannot be. Or else there would be more than a split second between them. It's not possible. There's got to be direct contact between the ass end of the first second and the front end of the second second. There has to be. There has to be infinitesimally small contact. If there was more than that, it would be another second. And then there could be more seconds crammed into there and you'd never meet him. He'd never get through the door. There has to be a moment of contact which has no width to it. Because if it had width to it, there would be you could cram a second into there. And then you could cram a second between that and the first and that and the second, there'd be 3 seconds between the first and second second. And really, no, really, it gets into eons. You'd be like... It couldn't get to the door. There must be a point of contact which is a point. There must be. Or else all kinds of instants can get stuffed in there. What it boils down to is it the relationship, it's not possible that the relationship is starting in the way you always thought. It's not possible. It is impossible for there to have been a first moment of eye contact as he opened the door to Starbucks and looked at you sitting there at the table. That event is demonstratively impossible. It's not possible. It cannot be possible. It cannot be possible that he catches your eye for the first time. It cannot be possible that your relationship started. It cannot happen. I did a quick one, you have doubts, you're not quite sure, and I'm not pulling the wool over your eyes. But really, if you think about it carefully, if we had an hour more, I could sell it to you. You cannot be seeing what you're seeing. When you catch the boy's eyes the first time, it cannot be happening. The way you think it's happening, it cannot be happening. It wasn't that the door was not open. And then he touched it. And then it opened wider and wider. And then he's caught your eye. It's not true. It's not possible. If you really follow it carefully with your mind, it's not possible. It's not happening. It cannot be happening. So then your mind should say, okay, well, just tell us what's really happening so we can have a break. I'll tell you what's really happening. Your mind is projecting the boy. He's not opening the door. He's not putting his head on the door. He's not opening the door. The door's not opening wider, and you get his eye. That's not, none of that's happening. Your karmic seeds and your mind are opening one by one. Karmic seed opens. He touches the door. Karmic seed opens. He pushes on the door. Karmic seed opens. The door opens a little wider. Karmic seed opens. You project his eye. Karmic seed opens, and then that eye catches your eye. Whose eye are you catching?
No.
You're catching your own eye. If 6 months from then he turns out to be an asshole, whose fault is it? Whose fault is it? Whose fault is it?
It's
by the way, we just demonstrated the functionality of this viewpoint. You see what I mean? If you understand that the whole thing of the start of the relationship came from you, then you can fix the relationship. Then you can make a perfect relationship that goes on for decades after decades, never ends, gets sweeter every year. Gets impossibly sweeter every year. Okay? Forget this. It's not true that relationships have to get older, more boring, or that the people have to get drawn apart or something like that. If a relationship were conducted according to proper karmic technique, every decade that went by, it would be more and more impossibly sexy and beautiful. Like you say, no, it can't get better. And then you're like, next year you're like, yeah, it did. You know, getting like that, it just keeps getting better and better. That's the whole purpose to study this stuff, right? You want something like that. And now I'm talking that the relationship eventually goes beyond death. Okay? Like, you have a sexy, affectionate, impossibly beautiful relationship, which also goes beyond death, and then helps all the people in the universe. Now, that's a relationship. No, and that's what you will have. That's the purpose of love. That's what you will have. You will have that. You can have that. Don't think less than that. That's the idea. Okay. So the second of the six books of Nagarjuna was the root text of wisdom, and mainly it showed that nothing could start a star. Do you get a feeling for it now? You get a feeling for the truth of the starting and stopping thing, but I think more importantly, you get a feeling for the use of such a book. Oh, a boyfriend who stayed loyal and affectionate forever? Even after the kids? Yeah. Now that's a good book. Like that, okay? You can use it. The reason is to use the books for something. Let's do it real fast, because I'm not going to say anything else about the rest of the books, okay? Chintamche, these two books of the six books of Nagarjuna are considered the main ones. They are considered the two root texts, really. De Rigpa Drupa Rigpa Drupa. Proving the points made in those two books through the use of logic was the purpose for Nagarjuna to write the next book, which is called the 60 Verses on Reasoning. Rigpa Drupa. The 60 Verses on Reasoning. Okay. What I like about Buddha Rinpoche's presentation is he has a logical flow to the six books of Nagarjuna. People attacked his ideas in the first three books, so he wrote a fourth book called Proving My Critics Are Stupid. It's called Shutting Down the Critics. Okay. And it did. Okay, tsubutama. Shento keva dan tsubet tsubutama. Shimunampa. Then he wrote a book called, this is cool. What's basmikura mean? I love this word in Sanskrit. Basmakura.
No, basmakura. Burn. Burn.
Huh? Yeah.
It's destroyed. Burn.
It's better than that. It's like pulverized.
Annihilate.
It's pulverized into dust. The next book was called Pulverize Them Into Dust. And it refers to techniques for debating people. But it's called The Pulverizer. That stuff they put on your forehead in India, that's bhasma. That's pulverized bone. That they call it bhasma. Okay, like that. Okay. How many have you got so far?
Five.
One more and you have refreshments guaranteed. When Dhanpa Ramchin make your kunso to jitinki thane te ching dupa tumba thane dupa. Number six, there's a debate about it, which is number six. I like his, he called number six. This you're talking about the guy who put the tanga together, he's probably okay. And he said the last book is called Establishing That Things Could Nominally Be Happening. Establishing That Things Could Nominally Be Happening. What's that mean? It's true that the pen is not there when we all leave the room. But does the pen work? Yeah. Is it possible that the boy came to the door and caught your eye?
Yes.
It's not possible. We just went through that. You want it again or we want to impress me? It's not possible. But still he comes to the door. You still did meet boys in the past. They did come to doors, so rarely. Okay? It happened. So things are not happening in the way we thought, but they still happen. Nobody can deny that things happen. Okay? Don't try. Don't try to say, oh, this is not real. You know, that guy's gonna cause you so much suffering. He's gotta be real. Okay? There's some reality to him, or he couldn't make you miserable before and after the relationship. Okay? Alright? There gotta be something real there. Okay? He's coming from you, but he's real. In fact, we would say, last sentence. It's not true to say, he's coming from you, but he's still real. How should you say it? He's coming from you, and that's why he's real. Okay? Nagarjuna is like, don't go around apologizing for me, okay? Don't go around apologizing for Nagarjuna, alright? Please. You know, don't go around saying, oh, he's coming from you, but don't worry, he's still real, you know? Don't tell people like that. It really disturbs me. You can tell them Nagarjuna said, your boyfriend is real because he's coming from you. Not even though he's coming from you. Got it? All right, the difference. Feel the difference? All right, then you can have some questions. We'll come back and do some question answer maybe in about 10, 15 minutes. Okay?
Lam Rimpa and Dham Ngakpa.
Hello, hello. Hola. Okay. Okay, I can remember this word, just give me a minute. Pergosa?
Pergüenza.
Pergüenza? Pergüenza. No, question.
Ah,
esta pregunta. Mr. Tim, we need it. Yeah. We have about 20 minutes to do questions.
You spoke a little bit earlier about investigating. You spoke earlier about investigating your teacher, like really getting in and watching the students and seeing how that person is on their morale and et cetera. The question I have is, when you go looking for a heart teacher, what kinds of seeds can you plant to help create that person in your life?
Yeah, good. Okay. Tim was asking about, by the way, we're going to talk more about it, a lot more about it, but the process of investigating a teacher, right? Investigating a potential teacher. You meet somebody that you feel pretty good about, and then in this system you should investigate them like a, what do you call those journalists?
Investigators.
So you should
You should dig into their past and you know, make sure they're okay, you know. But then his question was interesting. You see, because in the end, whatever you find is coming from you. Okay? And you have to balance those two facts. You see, whatever you find negative about this person and whatever you find positive about them, that both is coming from you. Given that it's not just the negative things of the potential teacher that are coming from you, but the positive things are also coming from you, then his next question, the next part of his question was, well, couldn't you design a good teacher? Couldn't you just consciously design a good teacher? You see? And that's exactly what an intelligent yogi should do, you see? So I would make a list. If I was looking for a girlfriend or a teacher, I would make a list. Either one, you know, or a boyfriend or whatever you want. You want a relationship with a personal relationship with a partner, or whether you want a teacher, I would say make a list of what you want first, you see? Make a list of 5 to 10 qualities that you want in this teacher, you see? And then you have to go about studying the karmic seed that would create each of those qualities. Was I whiny? Okay, so you would have to, that's all, and it's very simple, okay? It's not hard. You make a list of what you want. If it were me, it'd be something like loyal, attractive, intelligent, not broke. And make a list, and then go through the karmic seeds for each of those things, you know? If it's someone I would like them to be loyal to me, well then, am I being loyal to my friends, you see? Am I there for my friends? And do I stick with them even when it's not so fun or not so pleasant, you know? Am I there for my friends? Then, you know, affectionate. You'd like somebody who's not just, what do you call it? All the boys are passionate, but they're not all affectionate. Right? So you want someone who's affectionate, right? Someone who just has... Someone who would come in and hug you sometimes, you know? For no good reason. And be nice to you. So then you would have to create the karma for that. You'd have to... I would say attack the qualities one by one, you see? So now we go on to a teacher, right? You want to create a good teacher, or a heart teacher. I would start with a short list of 5 qualities that you want, and then start crafting them, you see? Craft a teacher. Because you and I know it's not that you find them, it's that you create them. And then to a more intelligent Dharma student, the real teaching about teachers is please go make a good one, and it's not go investigate this one. You see what I mean? If a person's intelligent enough, they know whatever they find out through some investigation is coming from them anyway. If you find out the teacher had some, what do you call, abusing their students sexually or something like that, right? Then really, when you find that out, you have to look at yourself and say, have I been doing something similar? Or because why do I see this in my world? You see what I mean? Rather than going that way, I would do the opposite. You see, I would do what Tim was saying. I would say I would like a teacher who is sexually pure. And, you know, who honors people of the opposite sex, and they are clean-minded, and they feel that relationships are holy and sacred, and they don't abuse that kind of thing. They're not interested in abusing that kind of thing. I would like a teacher like that. So that would be in the top 10 qualities that I would like in a teacher. And then rather than investigating people's past necessarily, I would investigate my own behavior and say, are you being pure sexually? And then clean up whatever it is that you might be doing, okay? Small things. And then you won't meet a teacher who has a bad past that way. You see what I mean? You will run into them. There will be... The teacher you meet won't have any problems that way. So my suggestion would be like to make a hybrid between what you said and what I said before. So I would say make a list of what you want in a teacher. Strive to be what you want in a teacher. When you meet someone who's a candidate, check them out to see if they are clean and if they're what you want. You see what I mean? And then somehow the striving to be what you want in a teacher will result in a clean bill of health for that teacher. You see what I mean? You will find a teacher who's authentic and doesn't have any problems that are bad. Okay? Like that. Okay, so I'm suggesting a hybrid between checking them out and making sure that after you check them out, the answers come out good by being what you want to find yourself. Got it? You will, by being what you want to the teacher to be, in your small way. Teacher's supposed to be grander, right? I mean, I'm going to try to be nice to people and not bother people sexually. And on a small level, you know, like on the street, I'm not going to like stare, you know, and then I dedicate that to meet a teacher whose conduct for decades is pure. You see what I mean? And then go look for a teacher and you'll find one like that. You see? You create the causes. And then investigate them and you'll find, oh, surprise, everything's cool. Because I've been good for the last few months. Right? Got it? Somebody hasn't had a chance. Okay.
You mentioned earlier that...
Wait. Okay.
You mentioned earlier that frequently a person's life tragedy would turn them onto the path of questioning their life. And I was wondering if the seed that causes the life tragedy has any relationship to the seed that causes the questioning of their life.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. I thought you were going to ask me, is that a bad seed or a good seed?
Yeah.
To have a life-changing tragedy. You see? Or is there some... It's an interesting idea. I haven't thought about it much. So if we take the example of a life tragedy that changes... Well, I have thought about it. For me, it was the death of three people in my family in a year. When I was 22 or something like 21, 20, 21. And then suddenly my father died, suddenly my mother died, suddenly my father died, suddenly my brother died. In 1 year. So half our family died in 1 year. And then it wasn't a conscious decision, you know, it was a subconscious trauma. And I'm afraid it might be selfish. I don't know. Meaning, oh my God, that could happen to me next. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's some kind of very deep subconscious blow when people around you die. And it might be partly selfish. That you're like, oh my gosh, this could happen. Now it could happen to me. You see, like that. And then you question your life. Right? And I remember when I went to live with my Lama, I told my family we didn't have a phone because I wanted to focus, you know? I didn't want to, I wanted to immerse myself in the monastery. So I told them we didn't have a phone. And we had a phone. It wasn't my phone, but we had a phone. And then I said, you can't reach me, you know? You can send me letters. And for 8 years or something, I lived like that. I didn't go out of the monastery almost ever. And then one day the police came to the door, and they knocked on the door, and they said, you have to call your parents. You know, I'm like, oh, wow. And then I was taking Rinpoche to English classes in where? Lakewood. Like 5 miles away. So I would drive him to his English class and then I had to sit around and wait till he was done and then drive him home. And then he said, well, take me to the English class and then go to, I called my parents from a payphone so I would be honest. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't be lying. So I waited till we took him to his English class, went to a gas station, called my dad on a pay, this is before cell phones, obviously, and called my father, and he said, your brother killed himself. You know? And then I'm like, I thought it was my other brother, who was always like doing crazy things, you know? So I'm grieving, first of all, I'm grieving for the wrong person, for 1 minute, you know? And then I'm saying, I'm so sorry about Phil. He says, no, it wasn't Phil, it was the other one. And then I'm like, and then this weird, this very, very weird experience happened to me. I said, in my mind, I didn't hear him talk anymore. I couldn't hear anything else. And all I heard was this thing in my mind saying, what is he trying to teach you? You know, what are you supposed to, he's a divine being. He's trying to teach you something. Do you get it? Do you understand? You're the brother, the person you thought was born into your family and was just an irritating runt all those years. This very clear voice, and I hadn't studied Tantra yet, I hadn't gotten an initiation yet, and it was like, he's not a human, he's a divine being. What are you supposed to learn right now? And I didn't hear the rest of my father talking. You see what I mean? So I think tragedies, for a really well-trained practitioner, are not even just something that might be useful. They could be tantric messages. You see what I mean? They could be messages from a divine source. And so what kind of seed would that be? You see? And we say karna? Lengde. It means mixed black and white. Okay? It means a mixture. Okay? So It's one deed you did where maybe the primary deed was beautiful and your motivation was slightly wrong. Something like that. We call a mixed black and white karma. So the fact that my brother died, I think it was a mixed black and white karma, right? Or any tragedy which elevates you on a spiritual path would be a mixed black and white karma. I don't think you could say it's only good karma because it's sad. And then you can't say it's a bad karma because it got you into the monastery or something. You see what I mean? So I'd say mixed karma. And there is such stuff. Maybe we can say there's almost no pure white karma or no pure black karma. Almost all karmas are mixed. Okay. And so you get a mixed result. You get a boyfriend with a big nose. All right. In the back.
Geshe-la, I had this, I fell into this cycle where commuting to school for me was, in high school, it was a half hour away.
Yeah.
And then, like, an hour in traffic. And then in college, it was, I found a place where I wanted to enjoy walking, to just enjoy life and spend that time better. And so I found a nice neighborhood where I lived in College Town and, soaked it up and just, it was my vacation for me, right? Vacation from Diamond Mountain. And so I want to like kind of identify like what's creating that distance between places where
yeah.
I have to take that time to see people or take that time to do things I need to do.
Yeah, okay. Lack of proximity. Yeah, I would say not facilitating the process of people getting to things that they want to get to. And that's a very common karma. That's a very, very common karma. So observe people around you. Everybody around you wants something. You know, there's a practice in the monastery, I told you guys. They teach you in the monastery, especially if you're an attendant, okay? Like I was my lama's attendant, so I had to, I was basically his slave. And then I was supposed to cook, I cooked for him, I cleaned for him, I did all his laundry, I drove him everywhere, I built his house, and everything, cleaned his bathroom. And then he trained me how to be a good attendant, you know. And a big part of it was hospitality hostess, you know, because if there's a lama, then people are going to want to come see the lama. Then one of the attendants' main duties is to make those people feel welcome and to pamper them when they get to the house and they're supposed to meet the lama at 3 o'clock. Then you're supposed to greet them at the door, you know, with a huge smile, even though they just woke you up from a nap, and you're exhausted, and you want to be reading a scripture or meditating. You want to do anything but meeting this person. And then you're supposed to greet them with a huge smile and say welcome. And, you know, I know you, your job as an attendant is only one thing, facilitate people getting to the lama, you see, in a smooth and friendly way. And so we built the house so that people had to go past my room to get to him. So that I could serve them tea or some dinner or something. And then I was cooking all day. And I was making tea and I was washing up the dishes all day. It was pretty much that. Because he had a constant flow of visitors and each one had to be honored. This is a Tibetan custom, you know. So he trained me how to honor a guest, which is a big deal in Tibet, you know. And so you're trained. The person comes to the, you're like a geisha? No, the person comes to the door. And you're supposed to greet them, bring them into the waiting area, seat them, and then you're required to watch their eyes. You make small talk and you watch their eyes. You first of all, you lay things around the room, like cookies over there, fruits over there, teas over there, sodas over there, juices over there. You're supposed to spread it around the room. And then people, when they... okay, I got it.
Yes. Later. Okay.
Hang on. Lamas are still telling me what to do. And I like it. So they come into the room. You've purposely spread all the stuff around the room. And then you make small talk, but what you're really doing is watching their eyes, you know? And then they will say, Rinpoche said I should be here at 3 o'clock. The cookies are over here, okay? Rinpoche said I should be here at 3 o'clock, and I'm a little early, and I hope you don't mind. And then you're like, you're required as an attendant to watch their eyes. You're trained to watch their eyes. And then you say, would you like some cookies? You know? And they're like, oh, gee, I would love some cookies, you know? And then you think, then you give them the cookie and you watch their eyes. And then the eyes look around for a beverage, you see? And there's tea over there, there's coffee over there, there's juice over there. And you watch their eyes. And their eyes, human beings' eyes, scan a room. Almost every human being who enters a room, their eyes scan the room. And their eyes pause slightly on the things they like or the things they hate. So anyway, you're like, they're looking at the coffee pot. And then you say, I was just thinking to make some coffee. And you say, do you like coffee? And they're like, yeah, I do, you know. And so you anticipate their needs. You're, as an attendant, you're taught to make people feel at home and comfortable. And then you anticipate their needs. And then by the time they meet Rinpoche, they're already had some of their favorite things, like cookies and coffee. And then they have a very sweet experience with the Lama. And that's your job as an attendant. And the minute they leave the room, you jump up, you clean the coffee pot, you put more cookies on the dish, And you sit and wait for the next one, you know? And so the idea is you learn to facilitate other people's needs. And with distance from the things you want, it would be facilitating people getting to places. So you have to keep your ears out and your antennas have to be out. That karma, when you have a karmic problem, you've got to have your antenna out for the opposite, you see? And you say, let me see now. You listen in the room, you have listened to the conversations going on, and you try to pick up on somebody who needs to get somewhere, and then you jump on it, you know? You jump on it right away. And you say, do you need a ride somewhere, or can I get you somewhere, or do you need gas money, or, you know? And then that karma stops the karmic seed that has created distance between you and the things you want to do. Okay? And it works. And by the way, it's the only thing that works. I have people complain to me. People send me emails and say, I did what you said to do and it didn't work. I'm like, okay, then the universe is random and just do whatever you want. You know? I don't know. You know what I mean? What do you want me to say? You know, if I asked you to do something and it didn't work yet, what's the implication? You didn't do it enough. Or else it would have worked. Okay? Or everything's random. In which case, you can just do what you want. Don't ask me. You know? I mean, if it's just random that you happen to end up half an hour from your job or half an hour from your classes, then I can't give you any advice because whatever I say would also be random. You see what I mean? If there's a justice to the universe, which there is, exact justice, perfect justice, then it must be that if you could facilitate someone else's need to get somewhere, the distances between you and what you'd like to do would be shortened. Okay? And if it doesn't happen, then you gotta try harder. And that's all, I'm sorry. You know? And it does work. Okay? Think all that stuff works. And I'm, what do you call it? I can give you. I consider my life a testimonial. I have everything I want. Perfectly, you know. I think it works. Okay. We gotta go. So it's 6:07. I suggest we start at 7:40. Let's say 7:45, okay? I want you to have a nice, quiet dinner, okay? We'll start at 7:45, and we might go a little bit extra. We'll still go for 2 hours at least, okay?